At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us.
Small voices becoming, our children arise, rejoicing and drumming, lay fear and doubt aside. Children shouting, eyes wide open, breath and speech, we laugh and moan, call for mother, sing for father, take this wonderful wisdom home. Small voices becoming, our children arise, rejoicing and drumming, lay fear and doubt aside. We say we shall move this mountain, we join hands and lift our song, we call forth an old resounding cry for all to sing along. Small voices becoming, our children rise, rejoicing and drumming, lay fear and doubt aside. While other children sing a song of the changing wind, somehow they know this familiar song is growing inside their bones. It's growing in rising tones, the familiar song that we carry on. Small voices becoming, our children arise, rejoicing and drumming, lay fear and doubt aside. Children shouting, eyes wide open, breath and speech, we laugh and moan, call for father, sing for father, take this wonderful wisdom home. As
we come together on this wintry morning, let us take the time to quiet the mind, to be open to what is, and to welcome the holy. Come, let us worship together.
Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those we know who need our very real love and support. This morning, I invite you to hold in your hearts Joe Fatchett and Lori McGee. A puppy of theirs was severely injured this week, and they had to put the puppy down, Mika, and both of them are carrying great grief about that loss. And I invite you to offer prayers for an unremembered man. Elaine Bowen learned this week of a man found dead, abandoned in an abandoned building in Detroit. He was frozen in the ice at the bottom of the Ellersbader shaft. He had no identification and was found in an area where many homeless people live. not knowing if he is missing, not knowing if he was loved, not knowing if he is remembered. Please hold in your hearts prayers for an unremembered man. Great Spirit, what praises shall we bring this morning? What prayers shall we offer? Prayers for the hungry, the homeless, the cold. Prayers for the sick and the suffering and the lonely. Prayers for the ones who are trying to make ends meet and the ones who are looking at a tomorrow with no job. Prayers for the congregations and the communities across this country that we might keep the web strong in this time of trouble. These are the prayers we offer this morning. And with them we bring praises. Praises for these bodies, these hearts, these minds. Praise for our capacity to care, to act, to feel, and to love. Praise for yellow light as it comes into a sanctuary on a Sunday morning. Praise for the world created anew each day. Praise for the ties that bind us to life. Before these, we offer great thanksgiving. Amen, and blessed be. To begin today, a survey. How many of you regularly or irregularly participated in religious community when you were a child? Wow, that's more than I thought. Okay, so think for a moment about the experiences that still stand out from you from your time in religious community when you were young. Just let a couple of memories come to mind. Okay, how many of you would describe the first memories that come to your mind as mostly negative? If you could just put a word or a phrase and go ahead and call them out, how would you describe them? Okay, now how many of you would describe those first memories that came to your mind as mostly positive? What words or phrases would you put to them? Thank you. Last week, our director of religious education, Diana Van Winkle, and the worship associates and I did this exercise as a prelude to our conversation about children and youth and worship in our own congregation, and our responses were pretty similar to yours, responses of negative experiences in early childhood religious community, positive experiences, and then we had a few neutral ones that went right down the middle. My own experiences of religious community as a young person were infrequent and rather limited. While I can remember one positive experience in a Sunday school class, I'd say that most of my memories are neutral or negative. By the time I was on the cusp of adolescence, I had pretty much given up on the occasional churches of my childhood. I remember very clearly one of the experiences that sealed the deal. I was 12 years old and attending my grandmother's funeral. I was bereft, frightened, and lonely in my grief. Standing beside her open grave in the cemetery, I cried and could accept no comfort. One of my mother's church-going friends came over to me, and she put her arm around me and explained that my grandmother was in heaven now with God and Jesus and all the angels, and she was happy, so I should be happy. In my grief, those words struck me not only as hollow and senseless, but also insensitive. In retrospect, I imagine that she was only trying to share with me the solace that she had found, but it didn't work. She failed to meet me where I was, and thus failed to connect or to comfort. I stayed away from religious community for almost a decade. When I returned, it was to Unitarian Universalism. Intrigued by the ways I saw my first congregation relating to children and youth, I decided to make up for my own lost time and began teaching religious education. I started with preschoolers. Since then, I've been involved with ministry to children and youth in 5 different Unitarian Universalist congregations with kids and youth of all ages. I have studied the curricula we offer and the programming we typically use in our congregations, as well as the philosophy that undergirds the materials published by our Unitarian Universalist Association. And I have come to the conclusion that religious education for kids and youth is one of the things Unitarian Universalists do best. It's been that way for a long time. Both Unitarians and Universalists led the way in the Sunday school movement in this country. In 1790, the Philadelphia Convention of Universalists resolved to establish schools in every church to help teach literacy to kids who worked the other 6 days of the week. But then, as the establishment of the separation of church and state began to take hold, churches began to establish schools specifically for religious instruction. In 1810, the first known Sunday school in our country's history was established in the Liberal Church in Beverly, Massachusetts, which is now known as First Parish Beverly Unitarian Universalist. The movement to establish Sunday school spread across the country using mostly memorization and recitation as teaching tools. The preeminent Unitarian minister William Ellery Channing denounced these rote teaching methods, declaring that the great end in religious instruction is not to stamp our minds upon the young, but to stir up their own. Shortly thereafter, the Unitarian Sunday School Society took on the task of writing age-graded manuals for religious education in acknowledgement that Sunday school lessons should be written with the development of children in mind. Now, at the time, this was a completely innovative concept, but it was well into the 20th century before the curricula published for Sunday schools began to be child-centered rather than content-centered. When Sophia Lyon Foss was hired in 1937 by the American Unitarian Association to write a new curricular series, she was already widely regarded as a pioneering leader in religious education. The new Beacon series that she helped bring into being was radical in its focus on the child. Foss believed that faith is grounded in and formed by experience. The curricula she wrote sought to invite children to reflect on and share their experiences of life, and to reflect on those experiences not only using traditional religious resources like the Bible, but also the insights of science, philosophy, and ethics. Our contemporary ministries for children and youth have built on this heritage. We know that kids have deep feelings of mystery and wonder. We know that kids love passionately and care fiercely about justice and fairness. We know that children are inherently spiritual beings, and this is true regardless of the parents' or caregivers' spiritual sensibilities or lack thereof when they're small. And so thus we strive to give our kids language, ideas, and practices that will help them make meaning of their spiritual experiences and give them tools to shape their spiritual lives. We encourage them to grow and learn. We support them in their sorrows and losses, and we celebrate with them in their joys and successes. This is what we strive for in our religious education classes, and we owe a debt of gratitude to the teachers and the advisors who work to help make that happen week after week. But we also know that most of the religious education we offer to kids and youth doesn't take place in those classes that they're in right now. Most of the religious education we offer to kids and youth happens in worship, at coffee hour, during sleepovers and Halloween parties, in social action projects, and at church camp. Everything we do at church and everything we do in the name of church is our curriculum. And so I have some words specifically for those of you who are not formally involved with our ministries of religious education. No less than our teachers, you too are also religious educators. By your example, you teach kids and youth whether or not they belong here, whether or not they are a welcome and celebrated part of our community. In your interactions with them, or sometimes in your lack of interaction with them, you let them know whether or not you value their contributions to the congregation. Our kids, and especially our youth, notice where and how we spend the time and money the adults give to the church. From September through December, our kids read our covenant in unison with us each week, in which we promise to nurture community for all ages. And so I would remind you that all of us have a stake in fulfilling that promise. I also have a few words specifically for parents and guardians. I know that there are incredible demands on your time. I know your kids are busy with sports and plays and homework and friends and family. You're busy with your jobs and your families and your lives, and often with church work. And I know that for most kids, there comes time when they start grumbling about going to church. I encourage you to consider this perspective from Jean Harrison Nuyar, a religious educator and minister whose book Kathy read from earlier in the service. Many parents, she writes, yield to their children's resistance. They're so busy 6 days of the week, they say. They need time one day to sleep late, to have unstructured time, to relax. I wouldn't quarrel for a moment with this parental concern for the crowding of their children's lives, she continues. But I would question the assumption that church should be the first to go. I would ask parents to look closely at their priorities and to be deliberate in weighing and choosing what is to fill their days and their children's days. I would ask that they claim for themselves their rightful responsibility to determine how precious time will be used and not to let unreflected cultural pressures shape their family's values. But I was forced to go to church as a child, many parents say, and I hated it. I quit as soon as I was given the choice. I don't want my kid to learn to hate church the way I did. To this, Nuyar has two responses. First, not all church or synagogue experiences are alike. It is your job as a parent to find an engaging, substantive, life-affirming religious education program so that you can be sure if your child complains, it isn't because the program is pernicious. Second, and maybe more important, the dynamic through which you engage your child in religious community need not be felt as force. Children, of course, resist all kinds of things in their life that their parents nevertheless insist on: appropriate bedtimes, green vegetables, thank you notes, book reports. Why should the matter of attendance at church be any different? Which leads me back to where I began this sermon. We are working really hard to provide our children and youth with experiences in religious community here that they will look back on fondly and with gratitude, so that if they're asked by some minister in 25 years whether their experiences that they remember are negative or positive, they will say positive. With your support, with your time, talent, and treasure, I'm confident that we will grow. Not only in the total number of kids and youth whose parents determine that this is a life-giving place for them to be, but also in the quality of the ministries we have to offer. If you have not yet been directly involved with our ministries to children and youth, you can begin today. After the first service, the Religious Education Committee is hosting an open house, as I mentioned earlier. I encourage you to take a moment to go upstairs and talk to the teachers, check out the classrooms, and find out what they're working on. And some of you, I think, have signed up for Secret Friends, Surprise Friends. For the next month, children and youth and adults will be exchanging letters and artwork and little surprises with one another in an effort to build relationship and community. If you meant to sign up and didn't, we might be able to squeeze one or two more in. Or maybe you're into outdoor adventure. If so, then I encourage you to attend the upcoming Walden Weekend in the woods in Hiram, which is a wonderful way to get to know people and spend a day. But if you're more the indoor sort, you'll have an active imagination. The Kent branch of the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry will soon be in session with room for you to work your magic. Or if you're more of a Scrabble or Rummy or Monopoly kind of person, game night for all ages is coming up at the end of the month. The point of this recitation is that whatever your interests are, there is a way for you to be connected to our children and our youth. As I am sure the adults who are involved with our young people will testify, the gift of relationship goes both ways. So far today, I have been talking about the ways in which we, the adults, can support positive experiences in religious community for kids and youth. But the truth is that when we take advantage of those opportunities to relate, we are also blessed. When they smile at us, our spirits are lifted. When they ask us questions, they give us an opportunity to clarify and communicate our own ideas. When we listen to their ideas and observations, we may find our own thinking challenged and enlarged. When kids share their struggles with us, they give us an opportunity to touch again our compassionate centers. Their friendship animates our own lives. Their care and concern opens our hearts. Their affection is a gift beyond measure. Their trust, encouragement to be the best people we know how to be. One of the most profound experiences I ever had in church was in a religious education class. I was teaching sexuality education to fifth graders, our whole lives sexuality education, a year-long curriculum. And we were at the part of the curriculum midway through the year where we were talking about good touch and bad touch and what happens when someone touches you in a way that makes you uncomfortable. And we gave the kids homework. The homework was to go home and think of three adults and to write them down who they knew that they could talk to if someone ever touched them in a way that made them uncomfortable. And one of the kids came back next week with her list, and we asked them all to share it. And at the top of her list was her teachers in religious education. What a gift. When we choose to be in relationship with children and youth, the gift goes both ways. Blessing begets blessing for all of us. May it be so. Amen, and blessed be. And I send you with these words from Emil Gudmundsson. And now may we have faith in life to do wise planting, that the generations to come may reap even more abundantly than we. May we be bold in bringing to fruition the golden dreams of human kinship and justice. This we ask, that the fields of promise become fields of reality. Go in peace.